So, welcome back, and we're going to be looking at this second session. I will open it up for questions in a little while. The second subject that we wanted to look at tonight is where people were talking on the Facebook group about desiring change, and is that still working in duality? And this is really a subject that it took me a long time to kind of come to understand. Mainly because I couldn't see the error in the way I was thinking. So I'm going to try to explain that now. But as we just saw so brilliantly with Laurie, if you want me to say something again, or you want me to clarify it, or you want to double check that you've heard me, then please do ask about it. So if we're contemplating, or if we're wanting awakening so that it changes something in our circumstances, is that still meaning we're stuck in duality? So let's say we're feeling very unworthy, and it's impacting, as we were just looking at in the previous hour, it's impacting our relationships, our happiness. And we're hoping that from our contemplation, something is going to change out there, as we learned through lesson two. Out there is a reflection of in here. And as I come to see through my stories, then out there is going to change. And does that mean that I'm stuck in duality? If I'm hoping, if I'm not really totally doing contemplation just to see if this thing is really true or not, if I'm also got this kind of energy going on underneath that hopefully it will resolve this issue in my outer world. And that's normal, isn't it? Very few of us, I don't think I ever completely managed to contemplate, is this really true about a belief, just because I wanted to see if it was true. The questioning is always triggered anyway by some kind of suffering, isn't it? When something goes wrong in our experience, something that we don't want is happening in our relationships, in our finances, in our body, whatever way it's showing up in our career. That prompts the questioning. So, of course, we're going to be hoping for something to change. And that is natural. You cannot get away from that. And it's okay, because I really want to look at this mechanism of change. What is change? And is it really still true for us as the self, as the noumenon? So, the whole premise of change is two-ness, isn't it? Duality. There is something that it is now, and something it's going to change into. So, what it was before, and what it's going to be when it changes. Two different things. That's the essence of change, as most people think about it. So, not enough of something, suddenly it changes to more than enough of something, whether that's money or time or energy or health or whatever we're looking at. Our mind really believes that those are two different things, how it was before and how it is now. And if that were true, then desiring, out this outcome of desiring when we're contemplating would keep us stuck in duality, wouldn't it? But is change ever actually really occurring on an actual, on the absolute level of the self, of the noumenon, of the awareness? Is change really occurring? So if I had some a lump of Play-Doh here, and I made it into the shape of a square, and then I took that square and mushed it down and made it into a circle. On one level, we could say that there's been some change, but has there really, has the essence of that thing changed? Play-Doh. It's still Play-Doh, isn't it? Whether it's in a circle or a square shape. This is what we're doing with manifestation, actually. We're just changing the shape of something, but the essence remains the same. Appearance changing is not the same as actual change. So that's really important to begin to understand. Something appears out of the silence, and then the way it's appearing changes. It changes. The way it's appearing, it looks different. Is it actually different? So, when a cloud comes in the sky and you're watching and it looks like an elephant, And then 2 minutes later, it looks like a star, or and then it might take the shape of someone's face that you know, something like that. Has anything actually really changed there? Same essential stuff molded into a different shape. Has there actually become something new in that? Has change ever actually occurred? And if we take the example I've used in lesson 4 of the water vapor, and we cool that down into liquid water, and then we slow it down even more into ice, has anything changed there? And the traditional thinking is, of course, of the mind that, yes, of course, that's changed. But if we're more aware of the essence of something, has it actually changed? The water molecules are still the same H2O molecules. Nothing has actually changed. So what is the only thing that's occurring is the shape that it's taking is changing, not the actual substance itself. So you have this one great mass of consciousness, for want of a better word, the self, this great mass of the self. And it keeps forming itself into different shapes. And then those shapes appear to be different, appear to be moving all the time and changing. But if there is only one thing in essence, is that actually any different, really? Is change absolutely possible at all from this understanding? So when I'm recognizing this, if I desire something to be different than it is, I can never achieve that. What showed up as lack might show up as abundance, but still nothing has actually changed. It's just a circle to a square, or a square to a circle, I think I said. There's no actual change occurred in that. The cloud in the sky changed into looking like something different, but it's still a cloud. Or the wave on the ocean surface, there's no wave at all, it's flat. And then a wave seems to arise, and it seems to have been a change. The shape seems to arise on the surface of the self. It looks like something's happened, doesn't it? It looks like some change has occurred. So really recognizing that change is inherent in duality, or duality is inherent in change. We're free then to play with our desires. And in fact, if I desire my life experience to be different, if I don't have enough money and I really would like to have more than enough money, am I stuck in duality, or is it a useful thing? Because if I really want to begin to experience abundance, only when I really want what I want, am I going to be able to see the beliefs that are sabotaging that, as we were doing in the previous session, the sense of not being able to allow myself what I want? So it's okay to want something from that, as long as we come to see that nothing is really changing. What the human mind does is says that when there's not enough of something, that makes me feel bad. And when there's more than enough of this thing, then I feel good. So I need it to change so that I feel better. But if I can come to see that no real change has occurred, then does it have to be that I only feel better once this thing has happened? When I get more than enough money, or when my body stops hurting, or when my marriage is going better, or when my boss gives me a promotion, I'll feel better then. But has anything actually happened? Or is it just I'm rearranging the shapes in the appearance of manifestation? Why should that make you feel any better? You could play around with these shapes in the Play-Doh forever, but they're really just all the same essence. And when you see this, you can really begin to be happy right now. You don't need anything to be different, because you're only just rearranging the shapes. Now, I realize as I'm saying this that something might not really want to hear this inside. So what I'd like to do is open it up now for questions again, preferably to talk about this particular subject as well, and so that we can sort of hammer this out and the more people ask about it, the clearer it's going to become, because it's not necessarily an easy subject to come to understand at first. Okay, so we'll take those hands that are up there, and we'll ask for no more hands going up now. We'll see how we do for time. We might get time for more, but just in case. So we'll start with Gillian. She's had her hand up there for a while. So whenever you're ready. Are you there, Gillian?
I'm here.
Lovely. Lovely.
Yes, I've been struggling with what is keeping me from grasping the teaching and my own identity as the self. And one of the big stumbling blocks for me is my inability to forgive my mother. And I've done a lot of work on this in the past, never really changed anything. And I wanted to, and when I think about it, there's something in me that just cannot forgive what she's done. She was really very destructive. But I had a kind of a revelation about it that I wanted to ask you about, is that I had an experience several years ago, but it's coming back to me now as a somewhat important. I was going to a store that we have here called Best Buy. It's a chain where you buy electronic stuff. And I don't like Best Buy. And I really don't like the parking lot. But as I was walking across the parking lot, I felt that the parking lot is just hard black stuff, asphalt. And my body is soft pink stuff, and inside Best Buy a lot of plastic and metal stuff. I said, but it's all kind of one thing. It's all one thing. It's all stuff. And when I had that idea, at the same time, I felt a kind of great affection for the parking lot came over. And I realized it wasn't like unconditional love or anything, but it was a feeling like I have for my body, my liver, my lungs. I like them. I'm fond of them or something because they're mine. That is what I felt in that moment. So it faded away, but it gave me a feeling that I have two ways of relating to the parking lot. One is, more comprehensive. Now, from that position, I can include my mother. I don't feel afraid or angry at her, but it was an altered state, Helen. It was only like this, like a fraction of a second, but it was definitely an altered state. So my question
is, I like to say, actually, that's the natural state. What we're living in every day is the altered state. Yeah. Well, sorry to interrupt. Carry on. Sorry.
No, that's what I wanted to hear from you, whether it was a mistake or a fluke or something like that. The difficulty is that it just came over me. I wasn't able to evoke it or...
Yeah. That's what lesson four of the course is really about. In that moment, you were experiencing the parking lot and the Best Buy and your mother as they really are. So directly experiencing them. And there's a kind of openness in that, isn't there? There's a kind of freedom in that, rather than our thoughts about, so you walk into the store and it's like, I don't like it here. It's too busy. It's too noisy. Every time I come here, I have this, and before we even get through the door, we're setting up our experience of how it's going to be. And we might remember we're trying to park our car. I might remember last time we were there, somebody jumped in my parking space right as I was going to, and the spaces are too small. I can never get out of my car. There's no, so we're not really experiencing the thing itself, are we? We were kind of lost up here. And especially with a relative that's so close, forgiveness is really more about letting go of the way you think and feel. It's not really at all about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to forgive another person for something they've done wrong to me or someone else, or not done that I feel they should do, that's pretty much impossible, isn't it? from the mind's level at least. But I can work on my willingness to stop holding on to thoughts about it that's hurting me. You know, this person did something wrong, but it's me that's hurting, most likely, not them. So I'm holding on to this hot coal and it's burning me, but I still won't let go, you know. So forgiveness, if you see that it really is about you rather than her. Mm-hmm. And the way that the mind holds on is by saying, I can't forgive this person. Okay, forgiveness might not be about that at all. You know, forgiveness for me became, what am I willing to let go of inside just because I deserve to be happy? Right, because I'm the one that's going to benefit when I let go of these ideas.
Oh.
It doesn't mean I'm condoning anyone's behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, I might still not want to be around that person, but do I need to keep holding on to this inside? That's different. That's doable, isn't it? Reachable.
Well, that's, I got your book on the empowerment course, and I've been reading the forgiveness, and it's very, very helpful. I guess the stumbling block is, right now I'm writing political letters to people because what's going on here is terrible, you know. I can't just go through the day without speaking up, you see. And I feel like God might not punish Mother. I have to step in there and do the work, you know what I mean?
But can you punish her without punishing yourself?
Probably not.
And this might sound like a really direct question, but is your punishing of her actually having any effect on her or only you?
Well, I don't know. She died many years ago. She's toast. But it's still, she lives in my whole psyche.
There were people in my life that I never managed to forgive. And that may sound weird coming from me, but I found that there were certain people that it was impossible to forgive mm-hmm. from the place of separation. Wow. And from the place of wholeness, there is nobody to forgive. And that's not just bypassing. That is, I cannot actually forgive someone that's done something wrong to me, because they're not outside of me. My whole trying to do it is going to emphasize the fact that they're separate to me, which isn't no longer true inside. So I might not want to be around them, might not want to speak to them, but inside from the wholeness of the noumenon, then there isn't anyone to forgive. And I realize I've been trying to forgive this other person or let this go or something like that. The easiest and fastest way is into the direct experience of this moment that you had in the parking lot, where there was a moment. What happened in that moment to open this up? In that moment, there was just a willingness to experience now as it actually is right now, more than I'm experiencing my thoughts about it. So just coming to see if I don't make an effort, at least initially, to see if there's more than I'm actually experiencing in this moment. Have I experienced this moment right now as we're talking here?
Yeah.
Are we actually noticing this moment?
Yeah.
Because if we are, we'll begin to feel quite nice and relaxed, and it won't feel quite as expansive and wonderful as that moment you had at first. It will feel lovely, but the more that you do it, am I really experiencing this moment? Or am I kind of walking around like this, thinking, you know, looking at my thoughts, metaphorically, of course. Am I thinking I'm experiencing this moment, but really I'm just noticing, I'm filtering all of this through my beliefs in this moment, and it gets very watered down.
Thank you so much. It's been very, very helpful. I have a new way to see it.
Good, wonderful. I think in every lifetime, we all get one person that seems very, very hard to forgive, or maybe two or three, but at least one.
She's been a gold mine.
The best teachers, those people are the best teachers for us, aren't they? Whether we like it or not.
That's right. Thank you.
Good to talk to you. Jennifer?
Okay. I have a lot of questions around this non-dual subject.
Good.
So a couple would be, so when you described having a desire and that it's all one and it just changes form, that makes a lot of sense. But my question is, with non-dual, is the desire itself duality?
So the mind would say yes, but really no. So even if I think I'm desiring something to be different than it is, I can never achieve that. What I'm really asking for is for my outside experience to reflect more what is actually true, to reflect the abundance of this moment. That's really what I'm asking for. It seems like I'm asking for something to be different than it is. So when this thing that's annoying me right now goes away and turns into this, then I'll be happy or something, right? Mm-hmm. As we were talking about before, when my relationship goes this way, then I'll be happy. But has anything actually changed in that? Do you really want your partner to be different? Or is it really that you'd like your relationship to reflect, to mirror back to you the love that you are more? That's not the same as change. It's a little challenging at first to kind of grasp it. That's why it's good to go over it again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mind will say, well, you just want him to be different and you can never get that because what I really want, if something turns around to the opposite experience, has it actually changed? Or is it just manifesting in its full bloom? It was on half power because of my beliefs. Life energy is flowing through me and it's getting filtered down, watered down by my ideas about myself and not being able to be happy. Then those ideas have gone, or I'm not believing them anymore. And suddenly the full force manifestation comes of a happy, fulfilling, amazing, growing, deepening relationship. And mine says, there, it changed, you see. But it's like if you, the light here on the wall is on a dimmer switch. So if I turned it right down, it'd be very dark. If I turn it right up, it'd be very light. Mind will say that's different, it changed, but it's really a continuum of spectrum, isn't it? From there isn't really such a thing as dark and light. They're just kind of, one's the absence of light, and then it's more light and even more light, even more light, and then really bright light. Mm-hmm. So there's a lack of allowance of love for yourself and that, you know, in this relationship at the moment, and then it'll be allowance of love, full power allowance of love. Not the same as actual change, is it?
Right. Okay. Yes.
There's no dark switch that you can switch on. It's not really a thing. Lack of abundance in something is not really a thing. It's just what it looks like when we don't let the life force fully flow through.
It appears to be that way.
Yeah, and the mind says dark and light, or love and hate. It really believes they're two different things, abundance and lack, two different things, but they're a sliding scale, and either end, mind says they're opposites, but they can't be. It's not actual change. It looks like it. If somebody came and said, well, your relationship's changed so much, you're so happy now, you know, what happened? But it's really just what happens, what manifests spontaneously. The appearance changes to the highest thing that's possible in this moment, when we're not diminishing it unknowingly with our thoughts. You get a sense of it, yeah?
Yes. And with some of the non-dual teachings or things that I've kind of heard, like, you don't have any control over anything, and you don't get any say or any control on whether you wake up. You're not really there anyway. Things like that.
As a separate being, that's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So teachers will say that kind of thing to try to help us release the idea that as a separate being, I have free will, and if I just work towards, throw more effort at awakening, I'll get there twice as fast. Twice the effort, twice as fast. And actually, so you might hear a teaching that says you've got no control, just give up, let go. You can't control anything. And that is really a teaching to the ego, because the self doesn't need to control everything in that way. It is everything. It's kind of in charge of the cosmos in a way. You can't get much more control than that, you know, like you're handling this whole thing in a way. That kind of teaching is aimed at trying to drive a wedge. Most of a teacher's time is trying to drive a wedge between this belief that I am the doer, you know, and especially I'm the spiritual seeker. So when it hears a teaching like that, it's catastrophic to the ego. There's nothing I can do then. But as the self, there's everything you can do.
Thank you.
Does that sit right?
Yes.
Good. Good. Wonderful. Thank you. Lovely. Okay, Sharon and or Melissa? I'm not sure. Maybe both or one? There we go.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so I know what you said about that there is no change. Nothing's changing. I know that from the self, nothing changes. And because I was going to say, but.
That's a good one, yeah. And that's exactly, just stopping you there a moment, that's exactly the attitude I want to cultivate, because it's really intelligent to say to a teacher, okay, I know what you've said is true, but this that I've experienced or this that I know seems to contradict it. Help me reconcile that, right? Something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good. So I'm really experiencing incredible unworthiness. And so while I hear what you're saying, it's like I can't let go of that. And that feels like so real. And I feel like I have changed, because I've changed from feeling worthy to now I'm feeling completely unworthy. And I don't know how. I know that I'm the self, but I don't know how to just let that other piece go.
So if we keep kind of picking this thing back up again that's hurting us, why are we doing that? And not mind's why have I done this again? Why am I feeling, you know, not that one, just kind of, why am I holding on to this, even when I've seen it's not true? So let me ask you, if you knew yourself to be worthy right now, what would that mean for you? How would your life be different? How would you feel different? What would be, suppose you woke up tomorrow morning and you just knew there'd never been anything wrong with you. And that was so stunningly clear that there never could be anything wrong with any of us, in fact. How would that change how you move through your life and how you feel?
Well, I think it would just be an effortless movement. There wouldn't be any thought about, well, if I take this step, what's going to happen, or, you know, what's going to be different. So I think there's just an effortlessness and an ease and allowing things to unfold.
So then the question from that would be interesting to me would be, why do I need then to keep managing this process? What is it that I need to keep holding on to? Why do I need to keep deciding and trying to be worthy? What's that about? Can you see some kind of, if it would be effortless and kind of just unfolding, why do I on some level, of course not consciously, feel that I can't quite allow that yet? Why can't I allow that yet? Why can't I just let my life flow effortlessly? Why do I have to kind of, I'm going to use the word micromanage, but it's really ego's, you know, kind of trying to get a handle on this moment all the time, isn't it? Is about what I mean by that. So why do you still need to do that is a question I'm going to ask you. Not one you necessarily have to answer right now, but, you know, you can, of course, if stuff comes up too. But why do you still need to drive this car when it's got a really nice autopilot that you could just sit back and, you know, autopilot's in a plane and never mind. You get the idea. You're chauffeur driven. Okay, there's a chauffeur waiting to drive you wherever you want to go.
I think that there's still, I still think that I somehow have, the separate me has control, and I'm not trusting.
And why can't you trust?
Because I'm scared of the unknown.
So here's the crux of it, right? If I just let go, then I won't know what's going to happen. I'd have to really sort of dive into the unknown. And that's not a good idea, according to ego. So how is the known working out for you? Is it working?
No.
And I'm pointing that out because when I looked at my life, the known really wasn't working at all. So I kind of, again, I think I might have mentioned it earlier, like, how much worse can the unknown be? Maybe the freedom and the security is actually in the unknown. And maybe I've had it backwards, that what I know to be true will hurt me, actually. You know, and so just looking at that, is it really so scary to let go? Is it really going to be bad to be in the unknown? And really, if our thoughts aren't true anyway, we're already in the unknown. We just think we know what's going on. And that kind of sunk in for me. Like, I might think I know where I'm going with my life and what's going on, but do I really, actually? Do I really know on that level?
Yeah, and that's interesting, because I just got this real time kind of example of me saying, I'm not going to be able to attend this live. And here I am.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I was absolutely in no control of that.
Yeah.
Like, here I am.
So there the known was completely untrue anyway.
Yeah.
And that's how I eventually let go of the known, is it's not so anyway. Sorry, the cat's trying to... it's not reliable anyway. Life does what it wants to do, whether I think I know what's going on or not. And when I actually embrace the unknown, there's a deep security in that, that whatever I experience, and the unknown here is just like we're talking about with Gillian, actually experiencing this moment. I don't know what that is, but as I experience it right now, there's a peace and a tranquility and a worthiness in that, isn't there? The richness of this moment, experiencing it here, you and me, all of us, without thinking about it so much, just experiencing it now. Is the unknown really so bad? And do I really want to go back to the known? It's just kind of this huge myth we have as human beings that the unknown is really bad, really scary.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, because I'm thinking, okay, but I've asked you questions before and I feel good, and then I leave and then I feel...
So here's this number three, right, in the reasons why the teaching isn't working, because I get it, I assimilate it, it's great, and then I immediately have to sabotage it somehow without realizing.
But what I've realized is that as you were speaking and saying that here we are just in the moment.
And none of us, neither of us have got a clue what each of us is going to say next, right?
Yeah, but it's just no being in the moment, and nothing... None of the things that I was feeling unworthy about, or all the problems that I have, exist in this moment with you and I talking.
Yeah. So do you need to still keep being unworthy just so that you don't have to experience the unknown? Because if you were completely worthy, you wouldn't know. Who would you be without that unworthiness if it had gone completely? You don't know, do you?
No.
None of us do. Right now, you know that you feel unworthy, but if that was gone, all my problems were gone, I don't know what I would look like. And that's terrifying to ego, but so freeing to the self. And you know, this the unknown gets such a bad rap, but it's really quite groovy when you try it on, you know. And the known never worked for me at all. It was just one very long nightmare. So is it really working to keep us safe by staying with the known anyway? Not so much.
No.
Not so, in fact, not at all, if we're honest.
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah.
I really began to fall in love with the unknown, because in the unknown, this infinite silence, manifestation is free to take the highest shape possible in any moment, and that also looks like abundance. When I know what reality is, it's got to take that shape. Same, 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 same. Here we go again. Groundhog Day. And something just doesn't want that anymore, right? We don't trust the unknown because we think it's unsafe. That's been the assumption for our entire existence, isn't it? I have to know what's going on or else it's going to be very, very bad.
And truly things that I don't know, that have just, like I'm experiencing right now, have been really amazing.
All the good things that have ever come to us have come out of the blue and we weren't expecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were unknown and then they showed up, you know, and all the things we've really known has, you know, not been the best experiences. Even if you really, really desire something, when it shows up, it's better than you expect anyway. You could never have conceived it coming that way or thought about it. So it's always been the unknown doing it, coming out straight out of the blue, so to speak, the unknown.
Very good. Thanks.
Just examining this reasoning that the unknown is bad, right? And that the known is working so well for me anyway. Yeah. You know, that's really a good strategy to continue with, says ego. Like, really? Not so much.
Thanks, Helen.
He's smiling again, that's good.
Yeah.
And you made it. Yeah, you're here. Wonderful. Okay, so we'll go with Robert, last but not least.
Hi, Helen.
Hello. Hi.
I've no idea what questions I'm going to ask here. There were lots of thoughts.
Yay, straight in the unknown.
Jumping around. I'm sure something will come up. That was very interesting about duality and oneness and desire. And sorry, my dog, you've been having cat problems. I've got a dog problem. He's barking outside.
But don't worry, it's okay.
It's all meant to be.
Two cats are running up and down the stairs doing last night they were doing it as well.
I might have to bring him in, but let's see what happens. The thought that came in when you were talking, I mean, I really do get the point about it's all one and nothing really changes. And at one level, that can be completely true. And yet in the world of form, through the head and the brain, everything appears to change. I mean, the whole time, the world is, nothing stays the same. You wake up, this body wakes up every morning and it's died in the night and it's a different body that morning. And, you know, every single cell in my body is different to what it was 7 years ago. And it's all made up kind of stuff. So the thought that came in when you were talking was, but why bother if about desire? So why bother? I mean, if nothing's changing, as the self has peace and everything is just an illusion. The world of form is just an illusion.
An illusion as form, but not absolutely real as what it really is. It's a celebration of formlessness, we could say, right?
Well, it's beautiful and scary and tragic all mixed up at the same time. And I mean, it encompasses everything. And there's only oneness, so it has to be the same thing.
So what makes tragic then? Sorry. What makes it wonderful? What makes it tragic? Surely it has, if it's all the same thing, it has to be our thoughts about it that's really concerning our experience with it. If it's all made of the same thing, all of this, then what is making it tragic and what is making it epic? What really is going on there?
Well, that's a thought illusion. I mean, yeah, it's not. It feels real too.
Yeah, it does feel real.
Yeah. But yet it also feels not real sometimes too. It's I suppose where I'm going is I'm not saying the desire is wrong, but it's kind of irrelevant is what my feeling when you spoke was.
It kind of is and it isn't. You could say it's irrelevant because everything is unfolding. The manifestation is really just like a flower that's blooming. It starts off from a very small bud when I think I'm a separate being, and then it goes into an ever universe itself is expanding, and manifestation keeps expanding, more of, seemingly more of the same. Desire, then you could say, well, if that's happening anyway, what's the point in me desiring anything? But if you try to get away from desire, you can't. Like, even now in this conversation, there's a desire to understand clearer, isn't there? There's a desire, yes, to get this deeper. There's a desire to take another breath after this one, to continue experiencing. Desire is part and parcel. You cannot, it's interwoven with the fabric of manifestation. You cannot, even the word desire, if you look at the etymology of it, it means to give birth to. Deeds of and sire, it means to give birth to something. And I think it's Latin or Greek anyway, doesn't matter. But so part of the process of something coming into a form, a shape, is the desire of it. You cannot separate the two. It manifests on a thought and emotional level first, and then in a physical, tangible way. So firstly, you can never really get away from that desire. But also, desire is going to be pivotal to the process, because unless I really want what I want, I'm not going to be able to see. Only when I want what I want, am I going to see what beliefs are in the way of that process. So I really, really want this thing. Maybe we'll say I want awakening. Only then, when I really want it, will I realize I don't feel worthy of it, or I don't feel ready for it, or it doesn't seem safe on some level to do it, or something like that. So when you feel, let's say if you're really trying to understand something I'm saying and you're not really getting it on some level, you think, and then there's a frustration that comes up, a confusion right there. I want to get this, but I'm blocked, says the frustration. I'm blocked. So there's this belief showing itself there. So desire is really useful in that way. The moment some desire arises in this body, first thing I'll do is check out how it feels. If it feels really exciting, then I know there's that Christmas Eve feeling, ooh, I can't wait till, you know, then there's no belief in the way of that diminishing the process. So desire is really good at that, you know. I can see the little, not so little doggy.
Yes, I know, she's distracting me.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, there is desire. I mean, there's desire for deeper seeing. I definitely, that's there.
You can't get away from that, can you? Even now, for me, the same thing is going on.
Yes. But then the question is that duality? Or is that, is that duality is the question?
Only if I see how it is now and how it will be when the desire shows up as two different things, then it's duality. If I recognize that how it is now and how it will be is the same. How cute is that? Oh my goodness.
He's going to bark in a second.
It's
all meant to be.
It's really okay. Totally okay. Yeah. So if I can see that it's the same thing, then it's not duality. I get to decide whether it's duality or not.
Yeah.
And you get to decide right now in every moment, don't you, whether it's duality?
Yes.
Is there a however in that?
It's an and, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
Because let's take an antelope and a lion. The antelope's desire is to eat the grass and live, and the lion's desire is to eat the antelope. I mean, the universe, the world of form has been eating itself since it was created, in a sense, you know, it's like, there was matter and antimatter, and then, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
it's everything's eating everything. We eat everything. I mean, we humans, we eat animals and these plants, and then we die, and the plants eat us. And then the, you know, in the world of form, it's a big sort of oneness.
It's a whole recycling project, isn't it?
It's a recycling project.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where that was going, really, but other than the fact that there's two different sets of desires, I suppose, that are conflicting in the world of, and the mind says, well, I've got this objective and somebody else might have a conflicting objective, and that's where art, But the more peace you get, I find, I mean, the more oneness there is, and the more, it means there's less fear. And less fear gives you more time, and then there's a sense of peace and love. And from that, then the body and the mind tends to act in a more harmonious way, kind of thing, just naturally, because it's,
yeah.
I don't know what I mean. But that still points to desire. So that points to the conflicting desires, I suppose. That's the.
Well, what is the desire? If you look at any desire and trace it back to what you really want, what do I actually really want? Any desire at all, if you keep asking why you want that, eventually you'll come back to this, because I'll feel better. Because I'll feel better. So really, whether I want world peace, or whether I want awakening, or I want a cup of tea, or whatever it is that I want. Say again?
All of those things.
Yeah. So all of that I want, if I'm really honest, I want it because I'll feel better. I'll feel better when everyone else feels better. It still comes back to the same extent. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm not saying there is. But if we look at really, there only is one desire in the world, and that is, you know, when the tiger, lion eats the antelope, it will feel better. It won't be so hungry. And when I reach awakening, I'll feel better. And when I stabilize in this, I'll feel better. And when I transcend the mind, I'll feel better, you know, and on it goes. And when I help this person, when this person is no longer suffering, they'll feel better. So I'll feel better. You know, it always comes back to that. And you can do that with any desire at all. I want a better job so that I'll have more money, so that I'll be able to pay my bills easier, so that I won't be made homeless, you know, so that I won't have to live on the streets, so that I will survive, so that I'll feel better.
Yeah, mind can create a lot of scary things to worry about. Yeah.
It always comes back to this one place, that I'll feel better when I have it. So really all the desires in the entire planet are really about that. Whatever the mind's saying they're about, that's just the way that mind's trying to get that better feeling. It's much easier from there. They're not really conflicting. And really, ultimately, desire is... There go my cats, right?
The cat and the dog.
Nothing in the air tonight, yeah.
There is. It's animal.
So there's... desire is a frequency. It's a vibration, which is also the self. It isn't... they cannot be conflicting desires in that way, because it's just two different energy patterns in a way. Yeah.
Thank you.
Does that help? It probably raises more questions than it answers, right?
Yes, it helps. I mean, I can see that.
Each time we talk like this, we'll shift to a different place. And that's one reason I love these kind of, not just with you, of course, but with everyone. We can all deepen our understanding and all of that. Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so that brings us just about up to time. These questions, as I was just saying, I'll just very briefly... if we're asking, I would really ask you to challenge me on what I say, and to firstly to double check that you've got it clearly as well. But the more time we talk about it and understand it and go through it again, the more we're all going to deepen in our own seeing. So it might seem really crazy that just by conversation we could wake up to the self, but it can be like that, right? It can be the major way that it happens, rather than meditation or self-inquiry. All of that works together, but these conscious conversations we have are absolutely invaluable. So thank you so much. Namaste. So